Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's program, Ecumenism at St. Paul's. Pope Francis says authentic reconciliation between Christians will only be achieved when we can acknowledge each other's gifts and learn from one another with humility. Judith the Brave. Speaking at his general audience, the Pope says he believes women are more courageous than men and points to the biblical figure of Judith. Aleppo's continuing crisis. The Vatican official, sent as the Pope's delegate to the war-ravaged Syrian city, tells us about his visit and the people he met there. And an ambassador's insights. Kenneth Hackett, the last US ambassador to the Holy See, whose term of office ended in January, shares with us his insights into this unique posting. Authentic reconciliation between Christians will only be achieved when we can acknowledge each other's gifts and learn from one another with humility. That was Pope Francis's message to representatives of all the different Christian churches gathered in the Basilica of St. Paul outside the walls on the feast day of St. Paul's conversion. The Pope was leading Vespers for this solemnity that also marks the close of the annual week of prayer for Christian unity. Philippa Hitchin tells us more.
In his homily, Pope Francis reflected on the theme for this year's week of prayer, which is reconciliation, the love of Christ compels us. Reconciliation, he said, is a gift from Christ. Prior to any human effort by believers who strive to overcome their divisions, he said, reconciliation is God's gift given freely to each one of us. How do we proclaim the gospel of reconciliation today after centuries of division, the Pope asked. St. Paul himself makes clear that reconciliation requires sacrifice and a revolution of our way of living, he said. Just as Jesus laid down his life for us, so we are called to lay down our lives by living no longer for ourselves and our own interests, but living instead for Christ and in Christ. For Christians of every confession, the Pope said, this is an invitation not to be caught up with programs and plans, not to be obsessed with contemporary fashions, but to be focused on the cross where we can discover our program of life. The Pope recalled in particular the fact that Catholics and Lutherans are today joining in commemorating the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation, something he described as a remarkable achievement. Greeting especially Metropolitan Gennadios, representing the Ecumenical Patriarchate, and Archbishop David Moxon, representing the Anglican Communion, Pope Francis urged all those present to take advantage of every occasion to pray together, to proclaim together, and to love and serve together, especially those who are the poorest and most neglected in our midst. I'm Philippa Hitchin.
In an unprecedented event, the choral music at this Vespers was sung both by members of the Vatican Sistine Chapel Choir and the men and boys of the Westminster Abbey Choir based in London. This ecumenical partnership between the Westminster Abbey Choir and the Sistine Chapel Choir traces its origins back to the visit in 2010 of Pope Benedict to Westminster Abbey for evening song, an Anglican liturgy which he said he enjoyed very much. To find out more about this musical collaboration and its ecumenical fruits, Philippa Hitchin spoke to the Dean of the Abbey, the Very Reverend Dr. John Hall, and to the only full-time English singer with a Sistine Chapel Choir, Mark Spiropoulos.
The Sistina, as it's called, claims to be the oldest choir in the world, dating right back to the 6th century. Westminster Abbey was founded by the Benedictine monks in the 10th century, wasn't it?
That's correct, yes, 960.
Does the choir date from that same period then?
No, the choir really is a 14th century invention. What had happened was that in the 13th century, the cult of Our Lady was developing so strongly, and they had a daily mass of Our Lady in the nave, but they decided early in the 13th century to build a chapel in honour of Our Lady to the east of the abbey. And in the 14th century, they developed a choir of men and boys that would sing the daily offices and no doubt at the daily mass in the Lady Chapel. So the monks were singing in the main abbey church, and this choir of men and boys who were lay men started singing in the Lady Chapel. And after the Reformation, when the monks went in 1540 and again in 1560, 1559, so that's a sort of continuous thing since the 14th century.
And so it's the tradition has been carried on right the way through to the modern choir as it is today, as you say, still made up of adults and boys at the choir school.
So we have 12 lay vicars who are the men. The lay vicar term is an interesting one because obviously they're lay, but they're also deputies. Vicar means a deputy, so they're, as it were, deputies for the monks, as it were. So you see that ancient history feeding through into the modern terminology. And the boys are educated in the Abbey Choir School, which just educates the boys in the choir.
Let's look specifically at this collaboration between the Sistine Chapel Choir and the Westminster Abbey Choir. It began, if I'm not mistaken, following Pope Benedict's visit to the UK in 2010.
So the Pope came on September the 17th, 2010, and I think it was an extraordinary experience receiving him, and he, I understand from people, rather enjoyed the liturgy. Then the following year, I came to Monte Cassino and there were further conversations about what might happen. So on the Solemnity of Saints Peter and Paul, 29th of June 2012, the Abbey Choir was the first choir ever to sing with the Sistine Chapel Choir. As I understand it, other choirs had previously sung beside the Sistine Chapel Choir, but they hadn't sung with. And there was also our own repertoire during that service. So it was the most extraordinary experience.
How significant an ecumenical event was this, do you think, Mark, for the Sistine Chapel singers?
I think it was hugely important. Again, when we sang in 2012, I wasn't there at that time, but when we sang in 2015, when we then came to the Abbey, I think it was hugely important for the Sistine Choir as an ecumenical moment where we came and sang choral evensong, which I think maybe the first time that the Sistine has ever sung choral evensong, at least with a full choir, and to sing what you might call standard Anglican repertoire. At that time as well, we sang Parry, My Soul, There Is a Country, and we sang the Psalms of Choral Evensong to Gregorian chant. So I think it was not just an ecumenical moment, but also a hugely important cultural moment for the choir also.
The choir has, at the moment, been developing relations with not just the Church of England, not just the Anglican choral tradition, but also with many other different traditions, hasn't it? It has
That's
become
right.
something of a feature of the choir at the moment.
Yes, we've sung a lot now with the Lutheran choirs, recently with the Patriarch Choir in December from Moscow. I think this is a very important and a very welcome part of our work. I think when we sing together, I think it's the most beautiful expression of the Christian faith. And when we sing with a choir like Westminster Abbey, I mean, this is a choir which is really sets the standard of choral music around the world. You can see that Christians, Anglicans, Catholics are really cut from the same cloth.
When in 2012 we sang a concert in the Sistine Chapel on the eve of the Papal Mass on the 29th, Cardinal Bertone, who was the Secretary of State at the time, and I both spoke after the experience. And I felt that this was a really important moment in ecumenical relations, that somehow we've moved from the point of, as it were, sitting opposite each other, arguing or dialoguing or just saying, this is what I believe, this is what you believe, this is what we... Let's all see if we can believe in common, to walking together. And singing together, of course, is a wonderful way of working together. And that produces a whole range of new reactions and a new situation, in fact. It creates a wonderful context in which the dialogue that we have to have together, which is a very important part, you know, doctrinal understanding and so on, is set in a context of friendship, of collaboration, and above all, and this is so important, of worshipping together.
I think music has a hugely important role to play, because people, as you say, who may know nothing about the faith or very little about what goes on, they can understand and sense the significance of what's being said because they can hear that expressed through the music. Even if they don't understand what the words mean, they can understand how important they are. And the beauty and significance of it, I think, comes through the music.
That was Mark Spiropoulos of the Sistine Chapel Choir and the Dean of Westminster Abbey, the Very Reverend Dr. John Hall, interviewed by Philippa Hitchin. And you also heard extracts there of the music sung by the two choirs during the Vespers. Pope Francis says he believes women are more courageous than men, as he continued his catechesis on Christian hope. Pointing to the courageous example of Judith, the Pope urged believers to trust in God's providential care while doing everything in their power to respond to the challenges that come their way. Linda Bordoni reports.
Resuming his ongoing catechesis on Christian hope, Pope Francis recalled the courageous figure of Judith and of how during the siege of the city of Betulia by the Assyrian general Holofernes, she urged the despairing population to reinforce its wavering hope in the Lord and ended up proposing a plan that led to victory over the enemy. The example of this woman of great wisdom and courage, the Pope said, teaches us to trust in the Lord's providential care, but also in prayer and obedience, to discern his will and to do everything in our power to respond to the challenges that come our way.
Attendiamo fiduciosi la salvezza che viene da lui.
How often have we, he said, felt our trust in God waver? How many times has each of us, perhaps in desperation, been tempted to lose faith and expect the worst? Judith's faith, Pope Francis continued, inspires us to commend ourselves to the Father with trust and obedience. And remarking on her courage, the Pope mentioned that, in his opinion, women are often more courageous than men.
Le donne sono più coraggiose degli uomini.
So inviting the faithful to never impose conditions on God, but to trust in him and accept the fact that we are given salvation and his help in ways that are different from what we expect, the Pope urged us to commend ourselves to the Father with the same obedience that led Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane to pray, "Not my will, but yours be done." I'm Linda Bordoni.
It was once the largest and most important city of Syria, but became a symbol of the ferocity of the fighting that has ravaged this nation for nearly 6 years. Aleppo has been the main battleground of the Syrian civil war, but in December, pro-government forces recaptured the whole city, ending the rebels' four-year hold on the eastern side. During this fighting over the past years, thousands, maybe tens of thousands of lives were lost. Homes, hospitals and schools were reduced to rubble, and 30% of the ancient heart of this city was totally destroyed. It was to this war-ravaged city of Aleppo that Pope Francis sent an official delegate from the Vatican's Dicastery for the Promotion of Integral Human Development. Monsignor Giovanni Pietro Dal Toso visited Aleppo for 6 days in late January, accompanied by Cardinal Mario Zenari, Apostolic Nuncio to Syria. During his visit, he was able to meet the Christian communities and also toured Catholic charitable institutions and a number of refugee camps. On his return to Rome, Monsignor Dal Toso sat down with me and shared his impressions about his visit. He began by telling me what message the Pope had wished to convey by sending him to Aleppo.
Yes, I would say the most important meaning of my visit in the name of the Holy Father, which was, I have to say, at the same time together with the Apostolic Nuncio in Syria, Cardinal Zenari. So both of us, our aim was to give a personal testimony of the closeness of the Holy Father to the population of Aleppo. And this is a population which was for 4 or 5 years not just under bombs and suffering from the war, but also isolated from the international community and isolated from our Christian communities, isolated from other Christian communities. And it was in that sense important that we could give a sign of the presence of the Universal Church, a visible sign of the presence of the Universal Church to our Christian Christian communities in Aleppo, but I would say to the whole population in Aleppo.
What were your feelings on seeing with your own eyes the amount of destruction and devastation that this war has caused in the city of Aleppo?
Of course, I am very struck by what I have seen. I saw in the past destructions by earthquakes, but never in such an amount by wars.
Was it shocking?
Yeah, shocking, but much more than that, I would say, to know that behind all that there are persons who lost their houses, who lost their families, who lost their daily life. So this is not just the destruction of buildings, but behind that there is a destruction of our entire lives.
Did you visit both sides of the city?
Yes, because now there is this possibility. I was in Aleppo west, but I was also in Aleppo east, especially because in Aleppo east, Caritas Aleppo is now starting an important project of humanitarian help to the population there, which has now nothing, and they need everything. So they started an important project to support this part of the population.
As you said, you were visiting a number of Catholic charitable institutions, including Caritas, and also a number of refugee camps. How did you find the morale of the people there?
I would say my first impression from our Catholic communities, especially from our Christian communities, especially, was that they are very alive. I found Christian communities which are not, closing to themselves, but with the desire to restart their life, their normal life. And for me, this was a very important and maybe the first message.
But many Christians did leave because of the war. I've spoken sometimes to the Bishop of Aleppo, and he was saying that so many Christians did flee. Do we have any idea how many Christians are still there now in Aleppo?
You know, it is very difficult in this moment because there is also someone who's coming back, someone who's still going. But I was told that between 30 and 40,000 Christians are still in Aleppo. And of course, the hope of the bishops and of all of us is that much more may come back once the war is finished.
Is there any person that you met or whose story you heard about that was particularly shocking or poignant or memorable for you?
Yes, I must say for me, we visited the family of this Armenian Catholic priest, a very young priest. He was kidnapped 4 years ago, and since that time we have no news, no information about him. So one of the points of our presence there was to visit the family. And of course, we visited a family, and you can see the suffering of the entire family, not knowing what is going on about their own son. So there you can see, I would say, the human face of this war. It is easier to speak about destruction, about bombings, and but the very point is the human suffering behind that. Or
coming to that human suffering, the scale of the humanitarian crisis facing the people of Syria is huge, with over 13 million people internally placed. That's a huge number. How are they surviving?
Of course, the number is huge. 13 million is more than half of the population of Syria. And that means we have a lot of people to be helped in a very concrete way, beginning from eating, from a tent where to stay, with medicines and so on. So the humanitarian needs are very high.
Are they getting the help they need?
Of course, there is an effort from the Catholic Church, on the side of the Catholic Church, to help as much as possible, but the Church cannot do alone this big work. There is a presence of the agencies of the United Nations, and they also support the population. It depends a lot, of course, on the places where they stay. It is now easier to help in Aleppo than some months ago. We hope that this ceasefire, and I hope that the peace will be soon in Syria, exactly because we have to realize this big work of humanitarian support to the whole population.
And presumably poverty levels have increased enormously as a result of the war.
Yes, of course. As in any war, also in this case, the poverty among the population, even among population which was wealthy before, the poverty is growing.
I read read that around half of all Syrian children are not in school at the moment. Yeah. Are efforts being made to redress that problem? Did you see efforts?
We, from our part, from the Catholic Church, we know that this is a big priority. We are also trying to do our best in this field. It is very important that we have education as our priority. I was, for example, very happy to see how in some places in Aleppo we are doing, the local church are doing pastoral work, but also educational work with the children and with the young people. The future of Syria goes through the education of the young generation. We should not spare any effort to educate our young people. It will be important, not just for the present, but also exactly for the future.
Not to lose a generation.
And not to lose a generation, but this is not just a question of giving them an instruction. Education is much more. Education is also, for example, learning to stay together. Education is also that they develop their own skills. Education is also that they develop their own freedom. Education is also that they may grow in faith. We should also consider that the pastoral care of our Christian community is also a necessity as the humanitarian help.
You also met during your visit representatives of the Muslim community. How valuable was that meeting?
I think for me at least it was an impressive and valuable meeting. I felt there a big admiration for the Holy Father. I have also to say both of our communities, the Christians and the Muslim community, both of them suffered the consequences of the war. And we should also consider we had Syria and, I would say, especially in Aleppo, a long tradition of living in harmony. And this meeting with the Muslim representatives is a sign that this is the way how we should also face the future, together and not everyone for himself.
Given that the war in Syria is still continuing, even if now the battleground has shifted from Aleppo, how do you feel about this country's future?
We all hope and we desire that this was the position of the Holy See since the beginning, that the responsibles will find as soon as possible the way how to stop this war.
I was speaking there to Monsignor Del Torso, of the Vatican's Dicastery for the Promotion of Integral Human Development, about his visit to Aleppo. Kenneth Hackett was the last US ambassador to the Holy See, whose term of office ended this January, when, like all other American diplomats serving abroad, he stepped down from his post just before the inauguration of the US's new president, Donald Trump. A former president of Catholic Relief Services, Hackett was appointed as the US's ambassador to the Vatican in the summer of 2013. Before leaving Rome, he shared with Linda Bordoni his insights into this unique posting.
What were the memories you're going to take back with you? Which are the things that are going to stay with you?
This particular 3.5 years has been memorable in that Pope Francis made it memorable. The trip to the United States, the Cuba opening, the many issues that we have dealt with that are not very public on various countries around the world that are troubled. Venezuela, Congo, Burundi, even Somalia, Philippines, China. So the portfolio that we engage with the Holy See is global, and that was fun for me because my previous life had me moving around the globe. And it's important because the issues of war and peace and poverty and inequity and persecution, those are important things to try to bring a resolution to. But I would say that the memories of, you know, some of the liturgies, even, you know, you'd say, well, liturgies, come on. But they were special. The community of diplomats who are here accredited at Holy See is great. The many friends that I've acquired in the various curial offices. Mostly guys that I play golf with and tennis with, but they're wonderful people and I've enjoyed it. And the people who work really hard here and are dedicated in various offices. That old joke about how many people work in the Holy See, about half. That's not the case. There's people who put in long hours and really give their heart and soul to the work and fostering the positions of the Holy See and the church around the world.
Did it turn out to be what you were expecting? And what was unexpected for you?
Oh, it was much more than I expected. I had served on a number of committees here, but those committees had me coming in for 3 days and leaving. So I never got to really know a lot of the people in the various offices. What was unexpected is the Vatican has its own special way, and it's a bit mysterious, and 3.5 years is certainly not long enough to fathom its depths. You know, in addition to the people who really give their heart and soul, they give their heart and soul, and I know this from my previous career too, because they believe. It's not just a 9-to-5 job. It's because I want to make a difference. And that adds a special dimension. People hold on to their positions very hard. It's not just because the boss says jump that they jump. They really feel strongly about their positions. So that was a little bit unexpected, how much of that exists. The talent level is quite amazing. People are really smart and intellectual as well as compassionate and committed.
Well, thank you for saying that. Well, we do have quite a special boss telling us what to do.
Yes.
Has being here changed your life at all?
Well, one very, very nice thing about being here with my wife was that most of the things we did together. So I think it's a nice capstone for a long career working with the church, for the church, and now at the head of the church.
During your meetings with Pope Francis, can you tell us what he was like, what he said to you, what you came away with?
Oh, he is so affable, so engaging, so warm. We met on Monday. No, it wasn't a long meeting by any means, but, you know, he wanted to know how long we'd been here, what we're going to do now that we're retired, was it enjoyable? So it was just a pleasant but brief meeting, and that has been my experience with him when he went to the United States, and we were tracing each of his steps as we went around and encountered him on his arrival and in Washington and then up in New York and in Philadelphia. He's special. To me, I understood him as a Jesuit provincial. I'm a product of Jesuit college and Jesuit secondary school. I encountered this type of individual before, and I saw it in him, that a very smart, committed leader who listens and then makes a decision, doesn't equivocate. I admire that.
And that was the former U.S. ambassador to the Holy See, Kenneth Hackett, speaking there to Linda Bordoni. And that's all we have time for today. Thanks so much for joining us here on Vatican Radio. I'm Susie Hodges, and until next time, Laudato Jesus Christus.